A communications disruption can mean only one thing: invasion.
A communication disruption can only mean one thing:
negotiation. We've lost all communications.
Invasion. What will the future of Star Wars bring?
You must contact me.
You must contact me and listen to Reed.
They wouldn't dare.
It's unthinkable.
Initio, Bibbles, Babble, Bubble, Star Wars Prequels Appreciation Podcast.
It's outrageous.
Welcome to CO Bibbles, Babble Bubble, your one pod racing pit stop for all things Star Wars prequels related and Star Wars prequels appreciation related. Maybe that's one and the same, but sometimes it's good just to accentuate a point to get it all the way through. So if I have mentioned many times in the past that I try my best for this show to steer away from talking about the new things, because it's all about talking about the old, the prequels, that is, things that happened between 1999 and 2005, when the movies were released. Yet once again, the Mandalorian TV show is dragging me down and forcing me to talk about it, because it is loaded with wonderful prequels references. And this is not just little Easter eggs or characters, but visual clues and sort of inspirations that you see in there scattered throughout everything. So in the last episode, I talked about how midichlorians were introduced in that franchise with the imcount of the character popularly known as Baby Yoda, or, as we now know, officially named as Grogu. And, you know, I thought that was going to be a little one-shot there, but we're going to keep talking about The Mandalorian because prequel stuff keeps on happening. So, without further ado, let us begin. So, for starters, I think it's important to draw attention to, in Chapter 13, Baby Yoda, a.k.a. Grogu, is referenced to having been a resident of the Jedi Temple on Coruscant during the Clone Wars and leading up to and including Order 66. Obviously, that's a big prequel drop right there. That also means that Grogu counts as a prequels character because he was around during the time of the prequels. And not just like, oh, you know, Han Solo was a kid during the Clone Wars, but no, this is an active, you know, player. He was there when the Jedi Temple got bombed. You know, when Ahsoka leaves the temple, he was there when it got besieged by the 501st Clone Legion. And was there during the Holocron heist when Cad Bane, his crew of dastardly compatriots, stole the list of young Force-sensitive beings. So, there you go. You know, he was present for all of that. All of the Clone Wars show, all the movies, the kids the same age as Anakin Skywalker. And let's think about this timeline here. Okay, so Anakin was thought to have been too old to join the Jedi at 10. So that means Grogu, by that point, already was in the Jedi Temple by the time of the Phantom Menace. So that's kind of cool. You know, but you see that he has the emotional intelligence of a toddler at age 50. So does he have that emotional intelligence between ages 10, 20, 30, 40, and 50 as well? Or is it our usual rate, but slower, you know? So if what Anakin had at 10, would that be Grogu? Let's assume it's a factor of 10x. I mean, it's not quite. You're saying, is Grogu like a 5-year-old? More realistically, he's like a 3-year-old. But let's say he's like a 5-year-old. So every 10 years of his life is like 1 year of a human. So as a 10-year-old, he's like a little 1-year-old. So it's a guy. He's, you know, barely functioning. Yeah, look at all the lighting. You know, not even remotely tapping into his force potential. You know, when you do it 3, it's even 3 years is 50. It's even more preposterous. Obviously, it probably doesn't break down like it, but it's kind of funny to imagine that, you know, while Anakin was in the other room going, a cup, a ship, a cup, trying to guess what was on the back of the thing Mace Windu was holding up, you know, Grogu was sitting in his his little crib, reaching up and, you know, and all the, those little things spinning around his head and listening to little nursery rhymes, and probably all his other Padawan friends kind of, you know, aged up past him because, you know, these were the ones who were 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. And, you know, at this point, they're fully conversational, but, you know, not little Grogu. He's still, you know, goo-goo gaga-ing the whole time and taking a while to catch up. Must have been a real hindrance to have to keep him. You know, the more you think about it, the guy must have just been a financial and, you know, time-wise a drain. Just a financial pit. Oh, I gotta buy more diapers. Yeah, that's a big one. Diapers, man. You know? Maybe he's potty trained by the time we see him in The Mandalorian, but, you know, that's at 50. Where that, what God's green earth was going on for the first, you know, 20 or 30 years of his existence? You know, all the other Padawans who arrive at the same time as Grogu, you know, they're no longer pooing themselves. They can go to the toilet. They can go to the refresher. But Grogu, I mean, he probably can't even make it over there. And he knows he eats a lot. So that's probably a lot of mess and a lot of stink that, you know, Mace Windu and Yoda and Yaddle, Yariel Poof, Plo Koon are all, you know, pushing off on one another. Ki-Adi-Mundi, you know, maybe Ki-Adi-Mundi, you know, gets something, has to wipe it off with his mustache, his beard, the facial hair. That is gross, man. Anyhow, we won't talk about that anymore, because that's not what actually prompted me to have this discussion here today, because that's two episodes old. That was Chapter 13, The Jedi, in which we saw Ahsoka Tano. I'm not going to dive much into Ahsoka. There's a lot to say about her. A lot of people have gone full, beautifully articulated, deep dives about how great it was to have Ahsoka in The Mandalorian. And, you know, she technically is not a prequels character. She is a character from The Clone Wars, and taught by prequels character and taking place during the prequels period. But, you know, that's beside the point. It was wonderful to see her, and it was cool to see an animated character in live action for the first time. But I want to talk more about the episode that just came out a couple days ago. This episode is The Tragedy, Chapter 14, directed by Robert Rodriguez. First things first, you know, this is not a surprise to regular listeners of the show, but I am a proud Texan. I'm a proud alumnus of the University of Texas at Austin, Hook'em Horns. So anytime I see a fellow Longhorn alum doing awesome stuff in the Star Wars universe, that just, you know, warms my spirit. So we saw that, you know, Tia Sarkar, the voice actress, gave her, and I guess live action actress too, but she lent her voice for the role of Sabine in Star Wars Rebels, lifetime Longhorn there, Hook'em. And now we have Mr. Robert Rodriguez, who also is a proud burnt orange man, has his degree, a man about town, quite literally, if you live here in Austin like I do. So Hook'em Horns, buddy, glad to see a lifetime Longhorn making their stamp on something that I love. It's the merger of two excellent worlds. But yes, The Tragedy, a great episode. If you want a full deep dive, I say, you know, either go listen to It's True, All of It, a Star Wars podcast. They have a good one with Zabologist, or you can go to the Imperial Senate Podcast YouTube channel to watch the Three Blurgs and a Bounty episode where they talk about that as well. So all in all, good discussions through. But what really inspired me, and I felt like this may not be a discussion that's getting the platform it fully deserves, is seeing, and spoiler alert, I suppose I should say, I mean, you shouldn't be listening to this if you haven't seen the season 2 of The Mandalorian. I mean, I spoiled a lot if you haven't seen any of The Mandalorian, but especially if you haven't seen season 2, episode 6, or which is known as Chapter 14 across the entire series, just stop now, watch it, it's great. Okay, good pause, we're back. So, what I really wanted to talk about was the whole Boba Fett and Fennec Shand fight sequence against all those stormtroopers. Because the first thing I thought of when watching that was, holy mackerel, this is like the Jango Fett Sam Wessel show. Because, you know, you think about it, you have Boba there, he's wearing his father's armor, Jango's armor, and of course he's literally played by the exact same gentleman, Tamara Morrison, and then you have Fennec Shand. Now, obviously, Fennec Shand is a wonderful character in and of itself. I'm not meaning to say by any stretch that she is necessarily derivative or the performance is derivative or taking anything away from that. I just want to talk about character design. So we see that she wears a helmet with a veil that's covering the majority of her lower face. You only get to see her eyes, and she operates with a sniper rifle. Now, that entire outfit, that entire getup is very, very similar to how Sam Wessel from Attack of the Clones dresses. Now, as a reminder, Sam Wessel is the bounty hunter who Jango Fett hires to kill Padme. And we never really get to see Sam as a, as a great warrior or a great shot or a great fighter. You know, she does multiple degrees of separation to try to get Padme, first by blowing up the platform where her ship lands. Instead of killing her, they end up killing one of her handmaids. And then there's the attempt with the deadly, you know, creepy crawlies that go through the window, kind of like long millipedes, which weren't even something that was her idea. That's something Jango gave her to do. But she has a long sniper rifle. She uses it once, trying to shoot off Anakin when he's floating around through the wonderful space lanes of Coruscant. Anyhow, it's a great character design and a great chase sequence. But it's cool to see it picked up and placed down in, you know, an actual fight scene. You know, it's not carbon copy, but it very is clearly inspired by it. Fennec Shand and Sam Wessel. And so, you know, in the Legends continuity and in the great imaginations of our youth, we had to imagine that Jango Fett and Sam Wessel had some sort of relationship. I'm not necessarily talking about, you know, a romantic one by any stretch, but just as partners. And that is very likely the two of them found themselves in situations similar to what we just saw in The Mandalorian, kind of tricky, that they would have to get themselves out of. So it's fun to imagine, you know, what would Jango Fett and Sam Wessel have been doing together to get out of tricky stuff? You know, so as a kid, who I guess I would have been 8 years old when Attack of the Clones was released, it was fun, you know, to imagine and play with the Boba Fett and Sam Wessel figures and kind of say, like, oh, you know, Sam, you go up on the hill, I'll fight them down here in the cavern, you boo-boo, boo-boo, shoot them around and dive out here and that way and this way, and then playing with your friends and imagining that. And all of a sudden, we're seeing two characters who are clearly derived from those two, doing in live action which we had seen, that which we had seen in our imaginations. You know, so Fennec Shand in the place of Sam Wessel, Boba Fett in the place of Jango Fett, just involved in all sorts of cool, beautifully choreographed action sequences where, you know, just as Jango was known for getting involved and using all sorts of zany technologies, you get to see Boba Fett do it with the crazy knee rocket, for crying out loud, a rocket from the knee. You know, that takes the whole Rick and Morty boot snake and just say, like, bah, boot snake. You know, oh, there's plenty of times you use a boot to sneak people, like a boot knife. But no, knee rocket. That's crazy. And, oh, the cinematography for the fight sequence is great. So it's very easy to take these characters and swap them around and imagine that they're there. So that really warmed my heart as a viewer. That really inspired the young version, or the present-day version of myself, to revisit the young version fantasies. Young version of myself fantasies. You know, I can remember quite clearly, it's being on the playground as a child, living in Cranberry, New Jersey, with my friends, and we would have roles assigned to us that either were exactly like, okay, you know, you're Boba Fett, you're Sam Wessel, you're Obi-Wan, or just saying, you know, you're a bounty hunter with the big gun, you're the bounty hunter with the rocket, you do this and that, you know. Because, you know, as kids, you don't necessarily know the names of everybody as well as you do, you know, as an adult. You just think they look cool. You know, I very distinctly remember, like, oh, sitting at the top of the slide and pew-pew, pew-pew, you know, I'm not holding anything. I wasn't the type of kid to play with BB guns or even, you know, remotely, just kind of holding my fingers or a stick in a weird way and like, ah, I got you in the head, ah, you know, overselling the death scene and stuff. So it just goes to the whole theme that The Mandalorian is being made by people who are playing with Star Wars and making the Star Wars of their imagination reality. They're not trying to necessarily, you know, make, oh, cinema, like art house style cinema. No, it's like you have the toy chest and you're just playing with what you got. And so, you know, I sort of picture it in a way where, let's say, you have a bunch of Stormtrooper action figures and you have, you know, a Mandalorian action figure and maybe Boba Fett or Jango Fett, and you have Sam Wessel from Attack of the Clones. And so you're saying, oh, I'm making my own episode of the Mandalorian. Come on, Boba Fett and Sam Wessel, let's go take down the Empire. And then, you know, you got that one friend who says, oh, well, Sam Wessel's dead. She died in Attack of the Clones. You can't use her here. Like, oh, no, well, this isn't Sam Wessel. This is actually a brand new character, Fennec Shand, you know? I feel like I'm rambling on this point pretty extensively, but that's what's so nice about it, is just the idea that it is something that is continuous and free-flowing, like our imaginations and like the imaginations of the people who make the show. And, you know, it really makes you admire creators and writers who can take this stuff floating around in their head, put it to paper, make it make sense, and find and direct the people to perform that in a way that can incite these degrees of emotions, you know, that nostalgia is stirred up for something I did not expect it to be. You know, that's subverting expectations right there. Not what the showrunners of, say, Game of Thrones claim is exerting, you know, is overthrowing expectations. It's taking something that you're not even imagining could possibly happen with characters you couldn't even imagine possibly happening, and let it strike emotional notes you didn't know were there to be struck. It's like there's an emotional violin within me, the viewer, that exists within an orchestra room. Or you could, I'll keep rambling here with this. So imagine that your emotional spectrum is an orchestra room with a wide array of instruments. And when you watch a TV show or you read a book or watch a series of movies enough times, you come to expect, okay, you know, this is what the emotional symphony is going to be. Oh, here's going to come in the horns. They're going to play here, and we're going to hear plenty of, you know, the woodwinds. Here's the piccolos. Oh, maybe here's an oboe coming in. And, you know, you feel like, when I watch this, I don't get much strings action. I don't hear much from the violin and the viola. But it's when you strike something where it comes in and it mixes in with the melody beautifully that just really just knocks it out of the park. And I think that's what happens with The Mandalorian time and time again, because it's touching upon these prequels emotions, not necessarily prequels characters, but prequels emotions and prequels aesthetic and prequels feeling. And so for the generation that grew up with that, that's truly amazing. And they do the same thing with references to what will happen in the sequels too. You know, you can just see, like, just to jump into sequels talk very, very briefly, you know, they use bits of Kylo Ren's musical cue in that episode. So there is a bridge there going from Attack of the Clones to The Force Awakens, all within a 10-minute window that should have nothing to do with any of that. You know, absolutely nothing. It should be just a direct, you know, oh, it's a sequel to Return of the Jedi in terms of the main, like, timeline of things, and it's brand new characters, you know, with the exception of, well, here's Boba Fett, who we know from the original trilogy, so it should feel in the spirit of that, but it manages to touch in the spirit of so much more, because that's how life operates. Life is not just, you know, linear in the sense that what I'm experiencing now is solely derivative as the next step of what just happened prior. You know, there's references and hints throughout your entire landscape of an experience and foreshadowing of what could happen if you, you know, want to believe in fate or destination, or destiny, I should say, in that whole, you know, landscape. It's a blending of memories. You know, when you put on an outfit, very few people wear an entire outfit for the first time, where every single piece of clothing, you know, is brand new immediately in that experience. No, everything has particular memories. You know, let me just dissect what I'm wearing right now. You know, I'm wearing a pair of jeans that I've had since grad school. And, you know, I can remember, you know, the time I was in grad school, and that's when I was living in Houston, and now Houston memories start flooding in. But it's not like, oh, here in my daily experience, here's an Easter egg to let's reference the time that Reed lived in Houston for 10 months. No, it's not on the nose like that, because that's just ridiculous. Life doesn't really throw you these on the nose moments. And that's what good writing and good television should be able to do that as well. And that's what The Mandalorian does do. It's not like, oh, let's have the camera linger on Zam Wessel's skeleton for 30 seconds. Just to be like, hey, do you remember this character here from Attack of the Clones? Here's a little sign that says, you know, killed by Jango Fett, chased by Anakin and Obi-Wan. No, that would just be silly. That would just be ridiculous. And yeah, it'd be kind of cool for people who knew who she was and be like, oh, okay, well, there you go. That's kind of neat, I guess. But for people who didn't and not thinking about it, they'd feel like, what on earth was that about? But, you know, it's this kind of references we see in the Fennec Shan Boba Fett fight against the stormtroopers that, you know, it pays tribute to what was beforehand and reminds us of it and brings us back to there. But it doesn't have to. You know, that's what it does for me. And maybe that's what it does for some of you who watched it for the first time. Or maybe you're listening to me now and you feel like, oh yeah, I want to go back and watch the scene and see if there's references to Jango Fett and Zam Wessel. That's awesome. That's great. That's what I encourage you to do. But it doesn't have to hit those notes. It does not have to resonate with you in that degree for it to be a good scene. That's just an added layer. And that is a real, real excellent sign and a tell of what defines good art. And, you know, I don't want to be a critic here, but in this day and age, we have access to a tremendous amount of subpar creations. And I don't mean to, and, you know, this podcast and all, like, seriousness is probably a subpar creation considered to, you know, what a lot of other great folks are putting on there. There's nothing about me talking that I would say is groundbreaking, so I'm putting that full disclosure on there, too. But, you know, there's, because of what we have access to, people get to share their ideas. It's a wonderful thing, but some of it just doesn't quite hit the same note of what is truly excellent. And frankly, there's a lot of people who hide, you know, basic, but should be basic skill sets underneath. Like, look at me, I'm so great. But anyhow, it's always great that when we have this plethora of information and myriad of ideas, when you see something that sticks out as truly excellent, as something that's truly fantastic and made with care and has those sort of sprinklings. And that's what The Mandalorian is. That's what The Mandalorian has been. That's what The Mandalorian will hopefully continue to be. For those of us who are prequels fans, seeing that degree of inspiration thrown in there. You know, I prefer all of this infinitesimally better to when in the Rise of Skywalker in Babu Frick's droid shop. He's the Babu Frick, you know, the little fellow who fixed C-3PO. He's got a B-1 battle droid hanging out in the background. You know, that's cool. That's a nice visual cue, but that doesn't quite hit the same note as something that's as layered as this Zam Wessel Jango Fett inspiration sprinkle in our confetti cupcake. You know, that's more, I'm eating a sugar cookie and there's a single chocolate chip in it. I'm not going to complain. I'm actually going to be kind of happy, like, ooh, that was a little treat, but it isn't full and throughout the entire thing. Anyhow, you know, I clearly could keep going on about this for a long, long time. I have a lot of strong opinions about it and things to say, but I, you know, don't want to necessarily waste your earbuds in hearing my continued rambling. So I just wanted to say my piece on the matter and really get it all out there to the world. And like I said, hopefully if you have the time, you can go back and rewatch the episode and look at it with this lens. And try thinking about that as you watch other episodes of The Mandalorian or other things in Star Wars, or frankly, any other viewing art in general, or reading as well, and see, okay, what is this? Is something that's not an explicit Easter egg, but is clearly derivative of something else that is meaningful to me, and that'll make you just enjoy it like 100 times more. Strongly recommend it. I think most people kind of do that in the back of their head. They just don't articulate it. And when they do, they don't do it well, case in point. But it's still a fun and important exercise. That being said, thank you everyone for stopping by. I had something I was going to talk about today instead of this, but I just felt it was more pressing. So the good news is my next episode should be pretty well planned because I was supposed to do it hen. So keep an ear out, your eyes open, your tongue tasting. I don't know what good food, hopefully. Don't lick anything you shouldn't. Gosh. Don't lick anything anybody else has licked out. There's a pandemic going on. So just be aware. We got some good stuff coming down the pipe. So per usual, I will catch you
bubble, seal, bibbles, bubble, 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 bubble.